Energy flows through all living things like an invisible flame. Every second, your cells harness the power of 10 million ATP molecules, maintaining a metabolic intensity 10,000 times greater than the sun itself. Yet this extraordinary process depends on a mechanism so counterintuitive that when Peter Mitchell proposed it in 1961, most scientists dismissed it as absurd. Today, we know Mitchell was right. All life on Earth depends on proton gradients across membranes, a universal proton power as fundamental as DNA itself. Nick Lane's The Vital Question has been praised by Bill Gates as one of his all-time favorite science books, transforming our understanding of life's origins and evolution. This biochemist from University College London tackles biology's black hole. Why complex life arose just once in 4 billion years, and why it shares such peculiar features. The book's revolutionary perspective has influenced researchers worldwide, offering a framework that unites geology, biochemistry, and evolutionary biology into a compelling narrative about energy's fundamental role in shaping life. Life is often viewed through the lens of information, genes, DNA, and heredity. But this perspective misses something fundamental: energy. Every living cell must continuously extract energy from its environment to maintain order against entropy's relentless pull. This isn't merely a side note to life's story, it's the central plot. Consider what happens when you die. Your DNA remains intact for hours or even days, yet something vital vanishes instantly. That something is energy flow, the continuous harnessing of electron transfers through sophisticated molecular machinery embedded in membranes. This process, called chemiosmotic coupling, is as universal across life as the genetic code itself. What's remarkable is how counterintuitive this mechanism seems. Rather than using electron energy directly, cells pump protons across membranes, creating a gradient that drives ATP synthesis, like microscopic hydroelectric dams. This proton power operates at an electrical potential of 150 to 200 millivolts across just 5 nanometers, creating field strengths equal to lightning bolts. Every living cell, from bacteria to your neurons, depends on this same basic mechanism. Why would all life use this strange indirect approach? The answer likely lies in life's origins. Alkaline hydrothermal vents on the early Earth created natural proton gradients across mineral barriers, providing a geochemical template that living systems eventually internalized. This suggests energy flow wasn't just important for life's emergence, it was the fundamental organizing principle from which everything else followed. When we shift our perspective from what is life to what is living, we see that energy flow creates constraints that have shaped evolution in profound ways. These constraints explain why bacteria remain structurally simple despite their biochemical virtuosity, and why complex life arose just once through a singular endosymbiotic event that finally broke these energetic limitations. Life emerged on Earth approximately 4 billion years ago, when our planet was still young. Ancient zircon crystals suggest Earth had oceans much earlier than previously thought. Not a hellish lava world, but a tranquil water planet with limited land. The primordial atmosphere contained oxidized volcanic gases, carbon dioxide, water vapor, nitrogen, and sulfur dioxide, rather than the methane-rich mixture once imagined. The earliest evidence for life appears in 3.8 billion-year-old rocks from Greenland, not as fossils, but as distinctive carbon isotope patterns. Living organisms preferentially use lighter carbon-12 over carbon-13, creating a chemical signature that persists in these ancient graphite inclusions. Similar patterns appear in iron, sulfur, and nitrogen isotopes, providing chemical fingerprints of early metabolism. For over 2 billion years, life remained exclusively microbial. Bacteria colonized every conceivable environment, from scalding hot springs to frozen Antarctic lakes, from acid mine drainage to alkaline soda lakes, from deep sea vents to the stratosphere. They transformed Earth's surface chemistry, eventually oxygenating the atmosphere through photosynthesis. Yet despite this biochemical virtuosity and planetary impact, bacteria remain structurally simple. The traditional narrative suggests oxygen was the key environmental factor enabling complexity, that animals needed oxygen's energetic potential to power their active lifestyles. But this explanation fails to account for a puzzling observation. If oxygen were truly the primary driver, we'd expect to see multiple independent origins of complex cells. Instead, all eukaryotes, complex cells, share a common ancestor that arose just once in 4 billion years. This singular origin suggests something more fundamental than environmental change was at work. The answer appears to lie in energy constraints that kept bacteria and archaea structurally simple despite their metabolic sophistication. These constraints were finally broken through an exceedingly rare event, the endosymbiotic merger between an archaeal host cell and a bacterial endosymbiont that would become mitochondria. The primordial soup theory faces insurmountable problems. Even with favorable chemistry, oceans would contain organic compounds at concentrations far too dilute for biochemistry, just 2/1000ths of a gram per liter. Attempts to concentrate these compounds through freezing or evaporation create unstable conditions incompatible with cellular development. Moreover, ultraviolet radiation would likely destroy any organic molecules faster than they could accumulate in surface waters. Instead, alkaline hydrothermal vents provide ideal conditions for life's emergence. Unlike violent black smokers with their extreme temperatures, 250 to 400 C, alkaline vents offer gentle, hydrogen-rich flows at moderate temperatures, 60 to 90 C. These structures form when seawater reacts with mantle rocks containing olivine, generating heat and hydrogen gas in a process called serpentinization. This process has been ongoing since Earth's earliest days, creating vast networks of submarine chemical factories. What makes these vents remarkable is their microporous structure, a labyrinth of interconnected chambers where thermophoresis can concentrate organic molecules thousands or millions of times higher than their starting concentration. These chambers, typically 100 to 200 micrometers in diameter, act as primitive cell-like compartments. When alkaline vent fluids, pH 10, rich in hydrogen, meet mildly acidic ocean waters, pH 6, containing CO2, the pH difference creates conditions where electrons can flow from hydrogen to carbon dioxide, something thermodynamically unfavorable under almost any other circumstances. This natural electrochemical reactor, with thin iron sulfide minerals serving as primitive catalysts, could produce organic molecules that become concentrated through thermophoresis. The iron sulfide minerals form honeycomb-like structures that closely resemble the iron sulfur clusters found in modern proteins. Experiments show fluorescent molecules similar to nucleotides concentrating 5,000-fold in through-flow reactors simulating these conditions. Recent studies have also demonstrated the formation of simple peptides and lipid-like molecules under these conditions. The significance is profound. The ingredients for life, rock, water, and CO2, are among the most abundant substances in the universe. When these interact, they naturally form alkaline hydrothermal vents with proton gradients across catalytic micropores. These vents create a continuous flow of energy and chemicals, maintaining far-from equilibrium conditions essential for life's emergence. With an estimated 40 billion Earth-like planets in our galaxy alone, these conditions may be common throughout the cosmos. Similar hydrothermal systems have been detected on Saturn's moon Enceladus and are suspected to exist on Jupiter's moon Europa, suggesting potential habitats for life beyond Earth. The hydrothermal theory also explains why life uses proton gradients for energy generation, as these gradients would have been present from the very beginning. Modern cells maintain similar pH gradients across their membranes, suggesting they inherited this fundamental mechanism from their ancient origins in alkaline vents. The emergence of cells likely occurred in three stages within hydrothermal vent micropores. First, natural proton gradients across inorganic barriers drove the formation of small organic molecules. Second, simple protocells formed with organic membranes that use these natural gradients for energy. Finally, the genetic code emerged, enabling heredity and natural selection, eventually producing sophisticated proteins like ribosomes and ATP synthase. This process reveals a seamless transition from geochemistry to biochemistry. The iron-sulfur clusters in modern enzymes are essentially identical to minerals precipitating in hydrothermal vents, rocks bringing organic chemistry to life. Acetyl-CoA, sitting at the crossroads of carbon and energy metabolism, can react with phosphate to form acetophosphate, which performs similar functions to ATP, including driving the dehydration reactions that link molecules together. A critical insight concerns membrane permeability. Modern cells require nearly impermeable membranes to maintain proton gradients, pumping protons across membranes that block their return except through specialized proteins like ATP synthase. But this creates a paradox for early life. How could natural proton gradients in vents power protocells if these gradients would quickly equilibrate? The solution lies in counterintuitive membrane physics. Only cells with highly permeable membranes could harness natural proton gradients effectively. In leaky membranes, protons entering from the acidic ocean side could exit through the membrane on the alkaline side, or be neutralized by hydroxide ions flowing in the opposite direction. This continuous flow through a leaky barrier creates a steady-state gradient that can power ATP synthesis. Mathematical modeling shows these leaky membrane cells could extract as much energy from natural pH gradients as modern cells gain from respiration. Even more remarkably, early cells would have needed none of the energy normally spent generating proton gradients. Modern methanogens spent 98% of their energy budget pumping protons, leaving only 2% for biosynthesis. Protocells with leaky membranes would have had 40 times more energy available for growth. The evolutionary transition from vent-dependent cells to free-living organisms required solving a critical paradox. The last universal common ancestor, LUCA, could power carbon and energy metabolism using natural proton gradients, but only with extremely permeable cell membranes. Modern impermeable membranes would have collapsed these gradients. The sodium proton antiporter provided the breakthrough by converting proton gradients into sodium gradients, increasing available power and allowing cells to colonize wider vent regions. This adaptation finally made pumping advantageous. The deepest divergence in life between bacteria and archaea stems from their different solutions to this bioenergetic challenge. Both groups use electron bifurcation to power pumping, but with fundamentally different wiring. The key difference lies in how they repurpose the EC protein. Methanogens, archaea, maintained its original direction, using inward proton flow to reduce ferredoxin for carbon fixation, but had to invent a new pump. Acetogens, bacteria, reversed X's direction to pump protons outward, forcing them to develop a new carbon reduction pathway. Once both groups evolved active pumping, impermeable membranes finally became advantageous. Each lineage independently incorporated glycerol head groups into their membrane lipids, using mirror image stereoisomers, and developed distinct cell walls and DNA replication mechanisms. These fundamental differences didn't arise from adaptation to extreme environments, but from bioenergetic constraints during their escape from hydrothermal vents. This explains why bacteria and archaea have remained structurally simple despite their biochemical virtuosity. Their reliance on chemiosmotic coupling across cell membranes creates a surface area to volume constraint that limits energy availability as cells grow larger. When scaling up bacteria to eukaryotic size, energy production can't keep pace with volumetric growth. Surface area would increase 625-fold, but volume would increase 15,000-fold. Giant bacteria solve this problem through extreme polyploidy, harboring up to 200,000 genome copies positioned near the cell membrane, but remain energetically equivalent to normal bacteria with 5,000 times less energy per gene than eukaryotes. Eukaryotes escape the energetic constraints limiting bacterial complexity through mitochondrial endosymbiosis. Unlike polyploid bacteria with thousands of identical genome copies sitting inertly, mitochondria enabled a completely different cellular architecture. Free-living bacteria experience selective pressure to streamline genomes, shedding unused genes to replicate faster while accessing a larger community metagenome when needed. Endosymbionts follow a different trajectory. Living in the stable environment of a host cell, they undergo unidirectional gene loss. Mitochondria retain a small subset of genes because they must control respiration locally, a necessity, not a historical accident. The mitochondrial inner membrane generates an electrical potential of 150 to 200 millivolts across just 5 nanometers, creating a field strength equal to lightning. Without on-site genetic control, this powerful force would quickly destabilize, causing electron leakage, free radical production, and triggering cell death. This explains why the same respiratory genes remain in all mitochondria capable of respiration, and why giant bacteria maintain multiple genome copies positioned near their bioenergetic membranes. Bacteria cannot simply inflate to eukaryotic size by internalizing membranes because they need complete genomes stationed near these membranes, eliminating any energy per gene advantage. Only through endosymbiosis, where gene loss in mitochondria fuels nuclear genome expansion, could eukaryotes break this constraint. Unlike bacterial plasmids, which offer no inherent advantage to larger size, endosymbiosis created immediate benefits through metabolic syntrophy. The host gains substrates for growth from endosymbionts, making increased size advantageous and driving the evolution of transport networks. The evolution of the ATP-ATP transporter enabled the host cell to use the endosymbiont's ATP while simultaneously protecting them from free radical damage by maintaining proper ATP-ADP balance. This mutual benefit explains why both parties would burn ATP on extravagant structures like the dynamic cytoskeleton. Whole genome comparisons reveal eukaryotes as chimeric organisms. Around 3/4 of eukaryotic genes with prokaryotic homologs have bacterial ancestry, while the remaining quarter derive from archaea. This pattern holds across humans, yeasts, fruit flies, and other eukaryotes. The remaining signature genes unique to eukaryotes likely evolved faster, adapting to new functions that enabled morphological complexity. Eukaryotic genes are strikingly different from prokaryotic ones. They're genes in pieces, with coding regions, exons, interrupted by non-coding DNA, introns, that must be spliced out before protein synthesis. This messy arrangement requires the spliceosome, a complex protein nanomachine, to remove introns from RNA transcripts. The conservation of intron positions across all eukaryotes strongly suggests a single ancestral origin through an early wave of intron invasion. Thousands of introns appear in identical positions across hundreds of shared genes in organisms as diverse as humans and amoebae, far too many to have occurred by chance. This pattern indicates that bacterial introns from the endosymbiont bombarded the archaeal host genome early in eukaryotic evolution. This intron invasion created an existential crisis that drove the evolution of the nucleus, a physical barrier separating slow intron splicing from rapid protein translation, preventing an error catastrophe of nonsensical proteins. Sex originated very early in eukaryotic evolution, likely in response to the same genetic chaos that drove nuclear formation. True eukaryotic sex involves the fusion of haploid gametes to form diploid cells, followed by meiosis with chromosomal recombination to create genetically diverse offspring. While the molecular machinery for recombination existed in prokaryotes for DNA repair, sex uniquely involves reciprocal recombination across the entire genome. This process breaks up rigid gene combinations, allowing natural selection to see individual genes rather than fixed packages. The puzzle of why organisms have exactly two sexes remains incompletely solved. Theoretically, having one sex, where everyone could mate with everyone, or multiple sexes, allowing mating with larger portions of the population, seems more advantageous than just two. Yet across eukaryotes, from single-celled algae to humans, two sexes prevail. The fundamental distinction between sexes relates to mitochondrial inheritance. One sex passes on its mitochondria, while the others are eliminated. Even in species with identical-looking gametes, like Chlamydomonas algae, one sex's mitochondrial DNA gets digested. This pattern suggests mitochondrial conflict as the driving force behind two sexes. Mixing genetically different mitochondria in the same cell can lead to competition, where faster replicating mitochondria prevail, regardless of host fitness, essentially creating mitochondrial cancer. Cell division naturally increases variance between mitochondria through random segregation. This creates a fundamental tension. Variance benefits gametes, making selection more effective, but harms complex tissues, causing functional disparities. The solution? Increase the number of mitochondria in the egg cell by making it larger. This decreases variance between adult tissues while maintaining uniparental inheritance through tiny sperm cells that exclude mitochondria. When mitochondrial and nuclear genes don't match properly, electrons accumulate in the respiratory chain, generating free radicals that trigger programmed cell death, apoptosis. This mechanism effectively eliminates cells with mismatched genomes, explaining how natural selection maintains compatibility between these diverging genetic systems. The process is remarkably conserved across all eukaryotes. Plants, yeast, and animals all trigger cell death through the same signal: falling ATP levels, free radical leak, loss of cytochrome C, and collapse of membrane potential. This universal property emerges from the fundamental requirement for two genomes to work together. Studies in marine copepods demonstrate how mitochondrial nuclear incompatibilities cause hybrid breakdown. Crosses between isolated populations produce increasingly sickly offspring in later generations due to mismatched mitochondrial and nuclear genes. Similar mitonuclear breakdowns have been documented across many species, suggesting this mechanism plays a significant role in speciation. Metabolic power must match metabolic demands for cells to function properly. When demand exceeds power, function fails and death follows. This explains why mitochondrial diseases primarily affect high-energy tissues like the brain, heart, muscles, and eyes. The concept of a death threshold refers to the level of free radical leak that triggers apoptosis. This threshold varies between species based on their aerobic requirements. Animals with high aerobic demands, like birds and bats, have a low threshold. Even modest mitochondrial dysfunction triggers apoptosis, eliminating embryos with poor mitonuclear compatibility. Animals with lower aerobic demands, like rats, have higher thresholds, tolerating greater dysfunction. This creates fundamental trade-offs. Species with low thresholds have high aerobic fitness and lower disease risk, but suffer reduced fertility and adaptability. Those with high thresholds gain fertility and adaptability at the cost of lower aerobic capacity and higher disease susceptibility. These trade-offs emerge directly from the requirement for two genomes to work together. The free radical theory of aging originated in radiation biology of the 1950s, when scientists realized oxygen-free radicals form naturally in mitochondria. Though intuitively appealing, this simplistic view has been thoroughly debunked. No systematic increase in free radical leak occurs with aging, and antioxidant supplements don't extend life but actually increase mortality risk in clinical trials. A more nuanced understanding recognizes free radicals as crucial signaling molecules. They optimize respiration by triggering mitochondrial biogenesis, increasing the number of respiratory complexes and mitochondria to boost ATP production. Free radicals signal when respiratory capacity is low relative to demand, either prompting repair through increased mitochondrial production or triggering apoptosis if the problem can't be fixed. What connects free radicals to aging is their relationship to metabolic rate and lifespan across species. Animals with low free radical leak, like birds, typically live longer than those with higher leak rates, regardless of metabolic rate. Incompatibilities between nuclear and mitochondrial genes increase with age, causing energetic deficiencies signaled by free radicals. This either triggers apoptosis or creates senescent cells that promote inflammation and potentially cancer. Exercise, calorie restriction, and low-carbohydrate diets benefit longevity by promoting stress responses that clear defective cells and mitochondria. However, our maximum lifespan, 120 years, is evolutionarily determined by our aerobic capacity, which was likely shaped by our ancestors' endurance running on the African savanna, giving us nearly twice the lifespan of other great apes. Lane concludes that the universal requirements for life, rock, specifically olivine, water, and CO2, might make similar origins possible across billions of planets in our galaxy alone. The alkaline hydrothermal vents that likely birthed Earth's first cells provided both a fundamental challenge, H2 doesn't readily react with CO2, and an elegant solution, natural proton gradients across mineral barriers. These vents created microscopic chemical gardens with conditions remarkably similar to those found in modern cells, suggesting a direct link between geochemistry and biochemistry. This energetic foundation suggests life elsewhere would follow similar principles, with bacteria-like organisms potentially common across the universe. The basic chemistry of life appears to be constrained by thermodynamic necessity rather than historical accident. However, the leap to complex life required the rare endosymbiotic event that created eukaryotes, when one bacterium somehow survived being engulfed by another, eventually evolving into mitochondria. This event was disturbingly close to a freak accident and was made more difficult by the ensuing cellular conflict between host and guest, requiring thousands of adaptations to establish a stable partnership. While genes permit endless variation, allowing humans and trees to diverge dramatically in form and function, energy flux remains unforgiving and unchangeable. From the first cells to our own bodies pumping an astounding 10 to the 21 protons per second across membranes, this unbroken energetic flame connects all life across 4 billion years. As Lane poetically notes, death is nothing but that electron come to rest. Our minds, perhaps the most complex structures in the known universe, represent an improbable conduit for this restless energy flow, allowing us to contemplate why life is the way it is. The profound insight of Lane's work is that energy constraints have shaped life's evolution in ways far more fundamental than we previously recognized. These constraints operate at multiple levels, from the basic chemistry of CO2 fixation to the sophisticated energy management systems of modern cells. The emergence of complex life required not just genetic innovation, but a radical restructuring of energy management through endosymbiosis. This perspective transforms our understanding of evolution, revealing that the path from simple bacteria to complex creatures like ourselves wasn't just a matter of accumulating genetic complexity, but required breaking through fundamental energetic barriers that had constrained life for billions of years. This energy-centric view of life has important implications for both our understanding of Earth's history and our search for life elsewhere. It suggests that while simple life might be relatively common in the universe, complex life could be exceedingly rare. Not because of a lack of genetic potential, but because of the difficulty in overcoming these fundamental energetic constraints. The fact that all complex life on Earth shares the same basic energy architecture, powered by mitochondria, underscores how crucial and perhaps unlikely this evolutionary innovation was.